Recording, and let's get started on Ona because I do want to. We took a long gap. 1 second, so I just get it formatted properly. Okay. So the fourth parak of Bav Metzia deals really with a few major topics. It's very, very centered around the free market. Okay, that's like our core. Issue is basically free market capitalism or not free market capitalism, but the market is like the key focus of the fourth parak of Bav Metzia. The first sigya, which we're not going to get into, although fascinating, maybe we will eventually. We'll go back to it. Is the sigya of Hazahav versus the Kasef? Which currency, when you have two currencies, is the defining and the controlling currency in a halachic transaction? Okay, so if you have gold currency and silver-based currency, so the prices of gold and silver vis-a-vis each other fluctuate, which one is the defining measure of value? And when they change, let's say when you bought something in cases of, let's say, pidyon haben, mitzvos that involve money, which one is really the defining factor? Okay, that's like the first big sugya in Hazahav. That just covers a lot of dapim. We're not going to get into that, even though it is also fascinating. And that gets into the question of, like, really, what is money? What defines money? Is it its functionality? Is it how useful it is here? Is it sort of more of its legal standing, which is like the more legally important currency, which is more stable? Is it because it's like a stable peg for value? And that gets into the question of, like, is copper currency the real currency? Is silver currency the real currency? Is gold, which fluctuates, let's say, the least, but is also not really used that much because of the denominations? So that's the first sigya. The second sigya is the one of Ona. And that is, if there's like a sort of standard market price, you're not allowed to overcharge more than a sixth above that market price. Okay, so our first sugya is, how do we define, let's say, currencies? Second is, like, in a free market, you know, is there a cap to the profit you can make, or to the cut that you can take above the normal market price? So the pasuk in Vayikra says, "V'ki timkurum em kaila mitecha, o kana miyad mitecha, al tonu ish et achiv." Okay, when you make a sale, do not oppress your brother. And now we're talking about karka. If you sell land before Yovel, so then when Yovel comes, it goes back to the original owner, right? Or to the original inheritor. Now, if it's 2 years before Yovel, the amount that you're really buying is a lot less than if it's 40 years before Yovel, right? So you have to take that into account. The mispar shnei tivuah tivot yimacher lecha. You need to sell it based on the number of years he'll actually be able to plant it, rather than sort of a flat fee, because he's going to have to give it back after some number of years. Lefi rav hashanim talbe miknato, lefi ma'at hashanim tamit miknato, ki mispar tivuot hu mocher lach. Because really, what are you selling when you sell land in Eretz Yisrael when there's Yovel? You're selling a certain number of harvests. You're not actually selling the chefs of the land. Velo tonu ishet amito. And you shall not oppress your brother. Okay, what's the nature of this sister? First of all, how do we define this value? All right, I said, if it's more than a sixth above market price, how do I define market price? What does that mean? Right. I also said market price. The pasuk doesn't say anything. It just says, right, now, when it comes to karka, right, I understand it's, you have Yovel, you could say, well, if I sell it as if I tell him I'm giving 49, you know, and then it really turns out it's 2 years from Yovel, that doesn't even sound like, oh, no, that just sounds like a mekachtos, right? I just lied to him, right? If I just don't mention it, okay, maybe, right? But did we peg like a value to the number of tevuot he's going to harvest? Unclear. But let's say we're dealing with metal, we're talking about a phone. How much is a phone worth, right? How much is you know, how much is a pen worth? Are we talking about the value of the chefza? Are we talking about its market value? If it's the market value, how do you evaluate that? Number two is, at the end of the day, right, if I offer the guy a pen and I say, oh, I want $10 for it, and he agrees, so what's wrong with that, right? And finally, you know, mekach u'memkar, or any sort of sale, any commerce involves someone trying to make a profit, right? And someone wants the object. The person trying to make a profit wants to make a profit, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't be involved in commerce. So since he wants to make a profit, is that a problem, right? That he's not really allowed to make a profit, you know, or there's the profit is okay, but only because, let's say if you're the manufacturer, you're making a profit, but only because it costs less to make than its value, however we're going to define value, right? Do we accept a free market in halacha or not? Okay, so what is the nature of the iser? Okay, let's zoom in on that core question, and we'll see what I mean by that in a second. So Amar Rava, lama li dekata v'achmana lav beribit, rav begezel lav beona. Why do I need a separate lav for ribis, gezel, and ona? We talked about this in the ribis shiurim. Tzrichi, di kata v'achmana lav beribit. Okay, what's the assumption? The assumption here is they're all basically the same. They're all basically taking money from somebody else inappropriately. They're all sort of a form of theft. Okay? So if I have ribis and gezel and ona, why don't I just say you can't steal and you can't take ribis and you can't take ona? Because in all of them, you're taking away someone else's money. Right? So Gemara says, no, I need it. Why? Let's say we only had a lav of ribis, you can't take interest. Nishum de chidushu. It's a chidish. The afilu belove asra rachman. Even the love is not allowed to do it. Right? Even the person who's doing the borrowing is not allowed to give ribis, even. I said, if I only told you you can't do gezel, so I say, good gezel, you taking it out of the guy's hands, bal korche, against his will. Aval ona, imala. But if ona, it's not bal korche, it's not against his will. The guy agrees to the price, right? By his own free will, he agrees to the price. And it's a very good question, right? Well, wait a second. Why, right? Why are we assuming that's kind of like gezel? Ikat rachman alav beona, mishum delo yad demachit. Right? If only had the pasta by ona, I say, he's mochel. He's not mochel because he just doesn't know. Right? So if he just doesn't know, I can't say, oh, well, he agreed to it because he didn't know to actually be mochel on the extra money. So he's giving me more money than he should. Right? He agreed to it, right? It was not bal karche, but he didn't even know in order to be mochel the extra money. Right, but when it comes to ribis, he knows that he's paying extra. You're right that he doesn't really have much of a choice in the matter because, right, the other guy has the money and he needs that money. So he has to agree to the terms of the loan. But at the end of the day, he's yodea and therefore he's mocha. So chadmi chadalas, yeah, ti chadmi tarti. So you can't learn one out of the others. You can't learn the other two from one of them. But what if I have two of them? Can I learn the third from them? Is a binyanav. Hi, Daisy. Lilith of Rahman alav berbit vitayti meanach, malhanach shaken shalomidat. Tome berbit midaite. Says, okay, well, when it comes, if I just skipped out on ribis, right? Ribis is midaite. The other two, right, both gezel and ona, are done without the guy's knowledge. Lilith of Rahman alav bona. Let's skip out on writing alav bona. Vitayti meanach. As if we didn't tell you a lav ba'ona, I wouldn't have learned it out from ribit and gezel, because lahanach ein derech mekach u'memkar b'kach. But ona, right, it's fundamentally part of mekach u'memkar. Right, you're trying to make a profit, or I would say even more, the mocher, the seller, right, always thinks that it's worth more, right, or always wants to sell it for a higher price. And the buyer always wants a lower price, right? That's just the nature of commerce. Ela lo lichta v'chman alav b'gezel v'teiti mehanach demay berachta parachta ma la ribit shekein chidush o na tochiach מה לא נעד שכן לא ידע או מכיר, זה בית הוכיח. וחזר הדין לא ראי זה קראי, זה ולא ראי כזה קראי. זה הצד השרש בין שכן גוזלו, אף אני אביא גזל. Okay, so the, if I had ona and I had ribit, so I'd say, okay, I don't need him to be mochel, because in ribit, even though he's mochel, it's still a problem. And even here, that's derech mekach u'memkar, ribit, it's still aser. So then I should learn out the gezel, afani avi gezel. Right, so then I could learn out gezel. I can definitely learn out that gezel is aser from ribit and ona, because if both of those were the guy agrees and the guy, right, it wasn't against his will, it's still aser. Kavachomer, you can't steal from someone. Right? That's pasha. That's a very legitimate, right, argument. Amri hachanami, in hachanami, el alav begazel, lamali lechodesh schar sachir. It's the reason why you have an alav by gezel is actually really for this case of kovish schar sachir, where you owe someone money and you don't pay your workers. Okay. What's the maskana here? Right? The question of this Gemara is very clearly that ona is basically a form of theft. Right? Lo yada uma limchal. The guy doesn't know that he's being overcharged. So you're taking his money basically without legal right to it. Right? You're taking something that you don't have the legal right to. Imagine if, right? Oh, let's imagine the following. Let's imagine someone is giving you change and accidentally gives you too much change, right? So it's not hard for us to imagine that that would be legally problematic. You don't have the right to this money, right? You didn't steal it. You didn't do like a might grab it out of his hands or grab it or right or hold him at gunpoint and take it out of the cash register. But ultimately, right, you have no legal right to it. So that makes, right, that makes perfect sense, right? The question here, though, later on, right? Of lo lichta rachman alav bona v'teiti mehanach ma lahanach shekein ein derech mekach u'memkar bekach, kind of switches us into a new area, which is, well, wait a second, this is derech mekach u'memkar, which makes it hard to argue that it's really gezel, right? So what is it? What's our maskan? So definitely Rava, right, seems to think that it is in fact gezel, or at least that's his nitya. The tour asks the following question: why don't you get malchus for ona? If you actually overcharge, you're over on an iser lav of altonu ishet achiv. Why don't you get malchus? So the tour says, "Ein lo kenat lav lefi shebichla lav de lo tigzel." This is very pashat because it's really just part of lo tigzel. Dinitan lehishavon shemane et chaviro chayav lachziro. It's a regular part of lo tigzel. Lo tigzel, you pay back. And if you're chayv to pay back the money, right? So then it's a lav anitin latashlumen, and you don't get malchus on a lav anitin latashlumen. Okay? Now, what's really important about that is this line, right? Which is, v'chla lav lo tigzel hu. He says, the reason you don't get malchus is because it's actually just part of lo tigzel. Yeah, Tehila.
Okay, two questions. First of all, going back to the Gemara, how does the idea of the fact that ona can be midah pose a challenge to the idea of it being within gezel? Like, I don't know if there's a concept of da when it comes to gezel.
Does the fact that it can be midah
challenge? Can be, right? That we get the first challenge to the idea is that it's midah.
Sorry, I lost my. Yeah, here we go. The fact that it's midate, yeah, that should, on the one hand, should undermine the fact that it's gezel. On the other hand, lo yada demachil. It's not about korche, but he doesn't actually know. And this is what's really still fascinating about ona, which is, like we were talking about by Ribis, on the one hand, the person knows, or the person's agreeing, you're not grabbing anything out of their hands. On the other hand, right, they're not really relinquishing their money willingly. Right here, it's because he doesn't actually know. Right, it's based on a false premise that he's getting his that it's this is the actual value. So it's not lo yada umachil. On the other hand, it's not bal korche. Right, he's doing it out of his own free will. It gets us into this interesting question of how much is the that inter you know, that liminal space between grabbing something out of someone else's hands, which is classic gazelle, and having rights and title to something, right, which is real ownership. You know, is there a space in between where you don't really have the right to it, but there's no, let's say, maisa gazelle? Is that possibly gazelle? And I think it's not clear, right? You start off with, okay, it's gazelle, right? And then the counter is, well, you know, I wouldn't, lo yada damach, you know, if ikas rachman alav bona, I'd say, okay, you know, lo yada damachio, but that's like, it's not totally, it's still in the part of the Gemara which is assuming gazelle. Another question is, I would argue, ask, is our main issue here really the fact that lo yada demachil, and therefore what I'm doing is gazelle, because I'm taking it without his actual rishus, right? It's like rishus but bitos. Or am I really saying that this guy agrees, right, but I don't have rights to it? They're a little different. One is saying that this guy's das is a toast, is a mistake, right? He agreed to it, but he basically agreed to it by accident, right? Or he agreed to it under a false premise, is more accurate.
Does that, I realize that I confused the lashon, and the date is actually with the ribi. Does that change in that case where it's not even bal korche, you agree to it?
Well, it's meaning so far in the Gemara, at least, it's putting them in the same. Okay. This whole thing is kind of saying, oh, they're still gazelle, but you know, why would it be gazelle? Why would ribis be a type of gazelle? Because it's bal karche, right? Why would ona? Because de lo yada demachin. Now, what's fascinating is that both of those are right present in one but not the other, and both of those are fall far short of gazelle gum. Right, I guess a little bit I'm asking is, when we say ona, let's say we say ona is gazelle. So I could say it's gazelle for two different reasons, right? One is that it's bal korche, right? Because I'm snatching it out of his hands almost. Then you say, wait a second, he agreed, right? And the answer is, yeah, he agreed, but he agreed under false pretenses. If he agrees under false pretenses, so he didn't really agree, now did he? Right? That is arguing that I really, you know, it was really about korche. He just didn't realize it. Right? Which much more similar to ribis, where we said, well, if you want to say ribis is gezel, it's because, yeah, he agreed, right? But he agreed because he was forced to, in which case he didn't really agree at all. So here he agreed under false pretenses, in which case he didn't really agree. Right? And that brings us also into the realm of mekachtos. Right, which is, it was a mekach under false pretenses. And then maybe, here's like an important nafkamina of that argument, which is, our default should probably be that we default to mekach tos, and that there shouldn't be a mechar at all. Right? On the other hand, we can say it's not that he never agreed to it, because he did agree to it, right? And his agreement, he knew what the object was, right? I didn't lie about what the object is. I didn't lie about its value either. I told you, here's this object, here's this pen. This pen is exactly what it looks like, and it really is, right? And I want to sell it to you for $10. He doesn't know that the market price is $5, right? Or I'm selling it to him for $6, and really the market price is $5. So in that case, let's say it's not that that it was a mekach tos, and that, right, his agreement is really bal karche because he didn't really agree because he's being deceived. It's simply that I'm giving him something worth $5, but I'm taking $6. In which case, that extra $6, right, that extra dollar, I simply don't have rights to. Similar to the argument by Ribis that if I give you $100 and then I get back $120, so for the $100, I have legal right to it because I gave you $100, now you owe me $100. But the extra $20 that you give back, it's not that I'm taking it bal korche because you just gave it to me, right, fully out of your own volition, but because I don't have legal rights to it, so monetarily I'm holding on to your money, right? Which is what Tosos' argument was, right, about the Yorshim, which is, What do we call it when you have someone else's money, but legally the rights to the money remain with the original person? As, oh, that's just really a halva, right? It's a new loan. So the borrower becomes the lender. And then when it comes to the yorshim, so then it's a milva al peh, and then you get into all that complicated stuff, which explains how the yorshim don't need to pay it back when it comes to ribis. Leave that aside, not to confuse other people. Right? But the idea by ona, bring it back to ona, would then be, by ona, in a chenami, the guy agrees, right? So I'm not grabbing it out of his hands. But what I am doing is I'm taking money that I don't have the right to. I gave you an object that's only worth 5. I'm taking 6. That extra dollar I have never compensated you for. The lack of monetary compensation undermines my ownership. Because I never paid for this, right? Or I never gave you compensation that entitles me to this extra money. And if I'm not entitled to this extra money, so it's really just your money, right? So just, again, we have, you could say, oh, it's really Gezel Gamor. It's very hard to say it's Gezel Gamor because you're not, right, grabbing it out of his hands. You could say, well, it's Gezel in the sense that I'm taking your money. Why? Either because I'm taking it and you don't really agree to it, right? You said yes to the sale, but only because you were ignorant to the fact that I'm cheating you. Or it's not because it's as if you don't agree to the sale. You do agree to the sale. It's just that you're getting merchandise worth 5. You're paying 6. That extra money, right, is just something that I've never compensated you for. So I have no legal rights to it. If I have no legal rights to you, it's just your money. And now if I take your money, right, and I never give it back, that's just called Gaza. Now, the nafkamina between these two would a little bit be, what is our default? If our default is that your consent was mistaken, so then really I should say the whole thing should become a mekach tavs, right? If I'm saying that, no, you agreed to the sale, but since I'm never not giving you merchandise that compensates you for the extra money, so then I should just have to give you back the extra money. Right?
So that actually leads to my second question, which is in the Torah and the other Rishonim, when they say chayav lahachziro, is that the extra or the entire sale?
Okay, so good question. It depends a lot. In the Gemara's mechalik between ona of shtus and ona of yesem shtus, if it's a sixth or if it's more than a sixth. And that's very much ties into this question. Why is it that we make these differentiations? Within the world of ona, both of those things exist. If it's more than a sixth, right? If it's worth 5 and I charge you 10, so then you can cancel the whole sale. However, if it's worth 5 and I charge you 6, then you can only demand back the extra 1/6 that I'm overcharged you. And the question is, which one of those is the default and which one of them is different? Is it really, it's always metal mekach, but in the case of shtus, there's something unique and different and interesting because X, Y, Z, which we'll discuss in a moment, or the opposite. Right? Really, you should always be returning the extra money, but in certain cases, it's so extreme that that it cancels the whole mekach. So we will go into that. That's exactly part of the question is like, are we, when we talk about this hashava and the tashlumin, where's it really coming from? So we're going to deal with that very, very soon because it ties in very much. Yeah. Okay.
What you were saying on the, when we were looking at the Gemara, that Gezel could be not having legal claim. I guess I just don't see that as Gezel because you can have not have legal claim to things all the time. Like, but that's not, doesn't mean I stole it if I have it in my possession. So it just seems like a weak extension of Gezel.
I lend you something for a set amount of time. At the end of that time, you just refuse to give it back.
Sorry. Right? Thanks. Yeah.
Right? If I lend something to you and you just refuse to give it back at the end. Right? You don't think that would be that could be considered Gezel?
Well, because the Baal Karka exists, I feel like that's why it's Gezel.
Yeah, but it's my money. You have it. I don't know that I'm entitled to it. Let's say I forget about it, and you know that it's mine, and you just won't give it back. Let's say the following. I'll give you a good example. Here we go. Lav b'gezel amali, l'kovish tchar sachir. Obviously, you can't steal from people. That's so obvious that I don't even need a lav for that. What do I need a lav for? Lo tigzo really is mechadesh to me that kovish tchar sachir. What's kovish tchar sachir? You hire someone to do a job, and then you don't pay them for it. Is that gezel? Right? So you're right, meaning it's not the classic case of gezel, because where's the maisa gezela, right? There's like where's the object that you're doing gezela on? But the Gemara here is saying, yeah, that kovish tchar sachir is
interesting.
You're right. I mean, you're like a good lamp, and you're saying, wait a second, there needs to be like a maisa gezela. There needs to be like a clear chefza hanigzal in order to do gzela. And I think you're right that certain features of dine gzela would not apply in these cases because you're right. You don't have the clearly defined maisa gzela. You don't have the clearly defined chefza hanigzal. But ultimately, they are a form of gezel.
Right.
You
know. I'm still inclined to say for the kovish tchar sachir that the element that makes a gezel is the Baal Karche.
I don't know. Is it? Okay, yeah, maybe. Maybe. And you have a good, Mara talks about Baal Karche as being important. Right? It's not so much that Rava is also, correct. Rava is trying to be very expansive. Not so clear that we accept that. Yeah. But if you want to accept this definition of, this perspective on Ribbis and Ona, and this expansion of Gezel, I think it's not too hard for us to understand. You don't necessarily have to buy it. But I think the tour is saying is, yeah, it's Bechla lo tigzalhu, because you have someone else's stuff illegally, right? Again, you're right that if the guy just has it by accident, if someone accidentally gives you too much change and then you realize, and then you go back to the store, you didn't steal from them, right? But if you realize and then you refuse to go back, again, change is always tricky because, there's like a certain assumed like mechila, that I think, or at least there could be in a lot of these cases where it's like, okay, they just weren't paying attention and it's not like worth your time, the amount that of time it would take you to go back, right, would cost more in your time than the value of like the change. That's not a good example, right? But I don't know, let's say it was a lot of money, right? Then I think we would say that, yeah, if it really clearly belongs to somebody else. Also, by the way, that case is a little trickier because by them giving it over, it could like trigger like an Aveda sort of din where they're sort of like negligently like relinquished control over it. So you can argue that it's a little different, but that's not really our issue right now. All right, anyway, the point of the tour, all right, is that this person, you have to return it because it's like gazelle. You trick this guy into giving more money than he should have. And now you have this other person's money, which you tricked him into giving to you, right? When you have no right to it. Now, again, I don't know what the tour thinks. The tour could think that it's, you tricked him and therefore he never agreed to the sale in the first place, right? Or he could think that it's because you have no legal right to it. Okay. So the tour says you're chayiv because heshves akzela, and that's also why you have to return it, right? Why do you have to pay it back? Because of the it's latigzo. Now, in that case, by the way, I would assume that it mostly would apply to the extra money. Now, the Pnei Yoshua has a different formulation, which is interesting. Nearly, de'be'emet le'inyan isura afilu b'karkaot asur lehonot lechatchila. There's an isur level where it's asur to do ona. There's a din in ona b'karkaot, that there's no din of ona by karka. Pnei Yoshua says that the isur Avona applies. Hadima tinan lehu hacha meona hainu delav delatonu lo kai alaihu umimela lo nitan lehishavon mahachzer haona. There's just no din of returning the ona by karka. The kai malan kol ma'id amar rachmana lo tavid I avid mahani. In general, if you do something illegal, it's still effective. Okay, so if you sell something when you're not supposed to sell it, or something like that, it would still work. You're just over on an eraser. Says, according to this, it's usher to do ona. Great. Usher. Why do you have to pay it back? Right? This is a very good question. There are plenty of yisurim in the Torah that if you do them, you don't have to like undo them, or you don't have to pay it back, or it's just irrelevant to pay it back. Right? I don't know, if you eat chazer, you don't have to like pay it back. And if you, I don't know, if you're mean to somebody, then you don't have to, you don't pay them, right? You might have to say sorry, but you.
Are there any other like financial and interpersonal things that you don't have to make up for?
I'm trying to think
of an example.
Yeah. Something that's, the question is this really totally financial, right? Altonu ishet achiv is like you shouldn't oppress or take advantage of your need. But yeah, that's a good point, right? In general, that's what's kind of tricky with these isurim, is they involve money, but are they fundamentally financial or not? Right? Are they are they misdemeanors or are they financial crimes?
I missed the ribbis unit, but if you charge someone ribbis, is there some sort of recompense if you, you know, YouTube or whatever are held accountable? Is there any like making up to the person, or do you just like bring a carbon? What do? Or is it too late?
Yeah, so there's a few machloks. And in the Amoraim, there's a machloks Amoraim whether or not you pay it back, whether or not you can make the malveh pay back the ribbis back to the loveh that he collected. And then there's a machlokas rishonim that even within the shita that you have to pay back, is that a financial din or is that a separate mitzvah? The Ramban counts a separate mitzvah of paying back the ribbis. Because he says, you, like financially it's yours. You have the financial rights to it. You own it. But the Torah says don't do it. And if you do it, the Torah says you have to pay it back. But it's totally not on a financial level. It's actually a good example. Now that everyone agrees to that. Some Rishonim think that no, right? By ribbis, it's also like gezel, and that you owe the money and you have to give back. This is a good parallel. So the Pnei Yoshua, right, says, okay, so theoretically, it should be something that it was also to do. It happens to involve money, but you shouldn't have done it, and you did it. And now maybe you should say sorry, but who says you should pay back? Ella, the efshar de kiva de kai belav de lo tonu, have a leg gezel, umar binan la li shavon mi vheshav es agzela, ube emes tmir li shalom atzir b'shem mefayishu postik, is a tam minalan de ona nitan li shavon. He says, and it bothers me, like, how come none of the Rishonim tell you why is it that you have to pay back ona? They just kind of take it as like a devar pasha. The Gemara says, oh yeah, you pay back ona. Who's like, why? Ubishlam a b'yeter mishtut, the heavy bit of mecca, when it's more than a sixth, and the mekach is then going to be batel, the heavy kain mekach tau. Says, when it's more than a shtut, when it's more than a sixth of the value of the object, so the gap between the value of the object and the sale is so stark that it undermines the validity of the sale. Right? Which makes sense, right? At some point, we can argue that, you know, that the contract states A, but it's clearly B, right? If the contract, let's say, discusses like a ring and puts that at a certain valuation, and it turns out it's cubic zirconium, and it never says explicitly in the contract that it's a diamond, right? But it's clear from the contract that the yachas they have towards it is a diamond, right? So it's clearly a mekach taos if it turns out to be a cubic zirconium, because it just, that's just not what we were talking about. Right? This is kind of like a parallel. It's like, if I'm paying 100 for something that's only worth 50, so then, right, our deal was just a mekach taos. this whole deal was totally just for something, or, you know, on terms that are just not relevant to the Mitzvah, right? So he says, that's a Mekachtas. Ela Bishtut, but by a six, the Kaimalan, the Kana, Machzirona, there, the Mekach is Kayam, the sale goes through, but you have to return the extra money. Kashem, Imanav Shach, what, right? Imisha Mekachtas. If it's because it's like, he was cheated and his das was not compatible with the actual terms of the sale, because he never really agreed to it because he's paying more than he should be, he just didn't know it, then it should be mekachtos, and the whole thing should be batel. V'imishim kra delotonu hakaimalan kol ma'ida merachmana lo tavidi yavid mahani. If it's just because it's usur, so okay, God said don't do it, you're a bad person that you did it, but what's left? Why would you have to return the money? In the case where you take a pikadon, where you take a guarantee, a deposit of something that the person uses for food, so you're not allowed to, but if you did, right, it still works. So it must be that if it's more than a shtos, it's a mekachtos. If it's less, and if it's a shtus, though, if it's a six, then it, karina be heishav es gzeila, must be because of heishav es gzeila, mehay taima kasama rambam, de in lokin alona, de havali nitak lase. Okay, and he says, and that's why the Rambam says you're not lokin kas nitak lase. Now, right, we have three, right, now makoros that basically all say that ribis is a form of the ona, sorry, is a form of geza. Right, the Gemara, the assumption of Rava, the Gemara of Samech Aleph, right? The tour says explicitly you're over on lo tigzal. And the Pnei Yoshua says, why do you have to pay back the money? Right? Because of the Heshav HaSagzim. Is there a difference between the tour and the Pnei Yoshua? Let's go back. There's an important, very important difference between the tour and the Pnei Yoshua, conceptually speaking.
I mean, the tour is in distinguishing between the sixth, the over the sixth and under the sixth. That seems to be a flat out policy.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, I should have, it's a very important point. I should have said to leave that aside. That's huge, right? That's actually much more important than what I'm focusing in on. Yes, that distinction is huge. We're going to do a whole separate shiur on more than ishtas, and also even on less than ishtas as a distinct question, because that's that's super important. I just want in like the very specific question of, let's say, the lav of ona itself,
right? Pnei Yoshua does hold that it's its own lav,
right? So the Pnei Yoshua is saying okay, lo tonu, that's a lav. The Torah is also going to know that it is also a separate lav. But yes, you're right. Right? The Pnei Yoshua is saying it's its own lav. What do you mean by that? Because I think what you're saying is right. I mean, technically, the Torah also agrees that in the Minyan and Mitzvos, you count it as its own lav. But you're right.
Okay. I mean, I'm not so certain, but I can keep talking if you want me to try.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So the relationship between Gezel and Lotonus like seems a little different, meaning that for the Torah, it's just very much part of Gzela. Whereas for Pnei Yoshua, there's something about Lotonu that it's its own issue. It's just that the giving back the money is because of its relationship to Gzela.
Okay, yes. I'll sharpen a little bit.
Please.
Torah, right, says, in Lokin Alav, why? Because it's Bechlal Lotigzo. And that's why you return it. Right, it's part of lotigzel. Therefore, you don't get malchus because you have to return it, just like any other case of lotigzel. Right, technically, it is its own lav. Right, but the tour really seems to accept Rava. Really, all three of these things are one big happy Asar family. Right, they're distinct. They're chidushim. It's not obvious that you would expand gezel to all these cases, but ultimately, this is just a form of gezel. The Pnei Yoshua, right, doesn't say that. What the Pnei Yoshua says is that ona is a problem of altonu eshet achiv. There's a lav of altonu eshet achiv, and because of that, Kiva dekai belav lotonu, because you're over on lotonu, havale ki gezel. Right? It then becomes like gezel. And then we say, oh, and since it's like gezel, now you have to pay back. It's not that, oh, it's gezel, therefore you have to pay back, just like any other gezel. Right? It's that it's rib ona. Ona is usser, and because of that, it's like it's gezel. Again, on the bottom here, Ela al karcha kivan de over belav, karinan be v'heshav es agzela. Because God said don't do it, okay? Mimela, you have to return it because you weren't allowed to take it, and now you don't have, right now, something. God said don't do it. Since you shouldn't, because of that, now it's gaz. You have to return it because of v'heshav es agzela. Now, he's not totally clear about that. Does anyone remember something from Ribbis that, like, is relevant? Could help, like, fill in the blank. Because the Pnei Yeshua leaves this as a blank, right? Yeah, it's just, like, an important methodological thing. The Pnei Yeshua does kind of does this a lot. He asks really sharp questions. His answers very often don't have the, like, the sophistication that, like, the Ktsos and the Minchas Chinuch and, like, Reb Chaim brought to the picture. They say, like, you know, like, the, they're like, you know, three and a half Gaonim of that time period, you know, like, and like, the half is, like, the questions of the Pnei Yehoshua. He asks, like, really sharp questions, really lumdish questions. You know, he didn't, and particularly in his time period, they hadn't yet developed, let's say, the tools, the intellect, like the language of the tools that allow you to, like, make clear lumdish chilukin or, like, lumdish definitions. So you see, like, he's like putting his finger on the, like, on the fault lines, but he doesn't necessarily have the tools to, like, express what makes this difference. If you look at the Chazon Ish, like, you know, it's like in the post-Brisk era, as the Chazon Ish said, what, on something similar, he had a similar question by Ribbis. He said, wait a second, the guy agreed to the Ribbis, so why is it Gezel? So the Chazon Ish's answer was that it is Gezel, but not because Ribbis inherently is Gezel. You took Ribbis, God told you not to take Ribbis. That cancels your right to the Ribbis, because God's the boss, right? He's the supreme legal authority. And therefore, you're taking someone else's money, which is not, you have no rights to. You're just taking someone else's money because God told you not to take this money. You've taken this money. You took someone else's money. You're a gazlan, right? And therefore, ribbis is gezel, says the Chazon Ish. Not because ribbis is gezel, but when you take ribbis, you're doing gezel because fundamentally you are taking something that God has canceled your rights to. I think the Pnei Yehoshua is saying something very similar when it comes to Ona, right? Al karchach kivan de over belav, karina be behesh ves exila, because you're over on the lav, you don't have a legal right to it. Once you don't have a legal right to it, mimela, you have to return it, because of behesh ves exila shir gadzal, it's someone else's money that you illegally have in your possession. Right? Now, that's very different than the tour. Right? The tour is saying it is gezel. The Pnei Yehoshua is saying, havelei ke gezel, because since you are over on gezel, or sorry, since you're over on a lav and you don't have the right to it, mimela you have to give it back, right? Or in other words, the tour says you're over on lo tigzel, it's gezel. The Pnei Yehoshua is saying it's rib, it's ona, but you have to be veheshev es agzela, right? It's not gezel, but you have to do veheshev es agzela because it's not yours and you have it in your possession. In a certain sense, or maybe in a direct sense, this is kind of exactly what Rachel was arguing, right? Rachel was saying, wait a second, you didn't steal anything, so how could you have been over on lo tigzel, right? He's like, wait a second, you didn't steal anything, so you weren't over on lo tigzel. So I think the Pnei Yehoshua's answer is, you're right. You're not over on lo tigzel, but you're chayv in v'heshev es agzela shir gazel. Right? You get that distinction? What he's saying, he's not saying that you're a gazlan, right? No one said, his question is not, why is it usser? And his answer is, oh, it's usser because it's gezel. He's saying that's not the issue. It's usur because al tonu eshet achiv. My question is, why do you have to pay it back? And his answer is, well, once God made it usur, right? Ot kivan de over belav of al tonu eshet achiv, right? Dikai belav de lotonu. You're only below tonu. You're not in lotigzo, right? Nonetheless, havalei kigezel. It's similar to gazel, and therefore it's part of a heshiv as agzela. So it's not part of it's not gazel. It's only part of a heshiv as agzela. Because ultimately, what is it? It's someone else's object or money that you have in your possession without legal rights to. So you have to return it. But you never stole it, right? So you never stole it, but you have to return the stolen object. Yeah, Tehillah.
It seems to me, but I'm wondering if this like blurs the line between looking at Hona as a misdemeanor versus financial issue. Like, I think if we're using the logic of the Chazon Ish, it becomes financial because of a misdemeanor or some weird combination that I can't quite sort out.
Yeah. I think there's like something called a felony misdemeanor in American law. I don't know, remember exactly what it is, but it's like, let's just take the different words for different things that you're not allowed to do and like mush them together. But yeah, it's like a cascading effect. Like it's not really a financial crime. It's really a misdemeanor, right? But that misdemeanor cascades into becoming a financial crime. You know what it's kind of like? It's kind of like mail fraud or wire fraud. Where it's like, oh, you sent a letter, you sent a letter to somebody having something to do with something that's not financially kosher. You didn't actually do anything illegal with the financial thing, but we did find that you sent mail about it. So we can get you on like wire fraud or something. Like every like major criminal always ends up going to jail, not because they embezzled like billions of dollars, but because of like, oh, and you committed wire fraud. Like that's it. We got you on that one. You know, like an email, you know, that like misrepresented your business. That's it. We got you on that one. All the other stuff we can't get you on, but now we could. So like, this is a little bit like that, where it's, you did a lav, you did something usur, because it was usur and it involved money, mimela, you have no rights to that money, and now you have to return it because it's like stolen property, even though you never stole.
I feel like it has to be stronger than, I mean, I don't, again, like you said, maybe like the issue is not as sharp, but if you're going to say that you're using the din of issue with Xela, you have to have some grounds for referring to the money as Xela.
Well,
unless you're just pulling out the general.
That depends on your perspective on Xela, right? Is the issue of Xela fundamentally a din about tikkun gezel or a din about a responsibility of hashavas mamon chaviro when it's your fault that he doesn't have it? Not quite as much.
Okay, wait, but like, so I don't know which one you're saying, but I'm seeing one of two options. Like either you legitimately have grounds, whether like initially or only post facto, for calling it Mamon Chavero, or you're just saying we're copying this, you know, path of action of returning, taking money that you took from somebody that maybe wasn't supposed to be yours and returning it and sticking it here, but in that case, it's fuzzy to call it Xela.
Does that distinction make sense? It's like a copy paste. I think he's saying that this is fundamentally part of Behishavas Xela. The reason why it's part of Behishavas Xela is not because you stole it. Remember, the tour said, why is it Bechlau Behishavas Xela? Right? In Logan Alav, because it's Bechlau Lo Tigzo, and because it's Bechlau Lo Tigzo, it's also Bechlau Behishavas Xela. Right? It's low take.
Right, but that gives you grounds for referring to the money as Xela, no?
Correct. Right? Meaning he says,
so what would the Pnei Yeshua say?
If you stole it, you have to do Veheshiv as Xela. The Pnei Yeshua doesn't say that. He says, because you did low tonu, right? Therefore, the object is like it's Havalei Kigazel, right? My Natia is that he's talking about it's the object, right? Is like it is stolen by you, for the Yeshivish. Right, al karchach kivan de over belav karina be veheshiv as agzela. Right, since you're over on the lav, we'll call it veheshiv as agzela because
we call it agzela.
We're not what you did. We're not going to call Xayla, but we're going to call.
No, but do we call the money, the sum of money that he's returning? Do we call that Xayla?
Basically, yes.
Basically, yes.
I mean, the money is you never stole it, right? But it's, you know, it falls under that din of, oh, you have to return the Gezel. Because it's you have illegal possession of someone else's money.
Mm-hmm. So it's like a post facto gain some Xayla-like status, or I'm just reading too much into it?
I'm not sure about that. I don't think the Pnei Yeshua just doesn't quite tell us exactly how he wants to formulate. I mean, the Chazon Ish was very clear, right? You took the God told you, you have no rights to this. You took it anyway. Therefore, you stole when you did that, and you did a Maisa Xayla because you had no right to it when you took it, and therefore you stole. The Pnei Yeshua is not giving us something that specific. So it could be anywhere from there all the way to, no, it's just similar to the Heshivas Xayla, just like this idea that you have to return back money that belongs to somebody else, but like not, but not actually Geza, even as a totsa on the money. One second, there's a. Misappropriation of funds, no. Possession of unlawfully obtained property. But that's not helpful. That's all about having obtained the property. Okay, let's see if it was by mistake. Still would be mispossession of funds. No, that's using the money. Misappropriation. No, that's not helpful. I'll have to look into the legal code to see if I can find a proper legal definition for when you are given in good faith. You receive the money, let's say, in good faith, but nitgale, that you don't have the rights to it. What happens if you hold on to it? What's that called? I don't think it's called misappropriation. It might be misappropriation of funds, actually. But I think that's only if you use it. Let's say you just hold on to it and you don't do anything with it either. That also be considered misappropriation of funds. Anyway, the point being, getting back to us, is I don't know if I can tell you conclusively like where on that spectrum the Pnei Yeshua was. Yeah, David. By the way, is it David or David? Like, what do you go by?
I usually go by David.
Okay, great.
So just going back to the Gemara, how is Pnei Yeshua reading the line, Hatzava Sheva Hani Shekin Gozlo? That seems to imply that when it comes to another, that it's not just Kigazel, but there actually is an aspect of Gezela in the act itself. It seems that the Pnei Yeshua is saying, well, there are a lot of similar dinim, and we treat it the same, but fundamentally, the guy isn't a Gezel. So how would he read that line?
Yeah. So the thing is, I would say that this Gemara is not is not clearly the defining Gemara on this topic. Because if you look at the a lot of other Gemaras, you definitely get a very different picture. So the question is, how seriously to take this Gemara versus the other Gemaras, let's say particularly for Ribbis, there's a very, very strong contrast between like this Gemara and the rest of the Gemaras of, let's say, in Ezer Neshech. When it comes, that's one thing. Number two is how to understand this whole middle bit, where at the end of the day, we said, okay, they're not Gezel. They're all very different than Gezel, right? And then we said, okay, well, let's build the Tzad HaShava Shebehen where you're getting someone else's money without, inappropriately. And then, Atzad HaShava Shebehen Shekein Gozlo, you could just be like the culmination of that as, if you can't do Onah and you can't do Ribbis, then of course you can't actually rob people at gunpoint. But this whole part of the Gemara really rejected Rava's original premise. Rava's original premise is, lovely, because Rachman alav Ribbis alav the Gazel alav Onah, they're all just Gazel. The answer is, what are you talking about? Ribbis is Midaita, right? Or Ribbis, yeah, Ribbis is Yadel Machin. Onah is Midaita, right? So you're right that they're Asur, but, well, those are just two, you know, but Onah is Derech Mekach Umemka, right? That's a totally different thing, right? So that whole back and forth might really be viewed as a rejection of Rava's basic question. And the question is whether this Sada Shoyin Shen Gozlo kind of brings us back to Rava, or just says, oh, okay, well, at the very least, if we had Onah and Ribbis, we could have known that you can't steal, right? Whatever Onah and Ribbis are, at the end of the day, they clearly demand a certain respect for, you know, the monetary rights of others, which would have been contradicted by Gezel. So it's a question of, like, do you, you know, the Torah definitely understands this Gemara as, like, yeah, Hatzadah Shav Shem Chain Gozo, and it's Gezel, right? And we're really back to the premise of Rava. I think the Pnei Yeshua would, I don't, you know, the Pnei Yeshua, again, his question is how much is he maintaining this idea of Gezel? It could be he thinks there's a strong Gezel component. It could be he thinks that there's almost no, it's a kid Gezel. You know, is it a Kaf HaDimyon or a Kaf HaShivyon? Is it, it's Kaf meaning it is, you know, it really is the same as, or is it it's similar to, you know, like obliquely? But it's definitely possible to read this Gemara as saying, well, you know, Lav Onah is Derech Mekach Umemkar. Of course it's not Gezel. It's a totally different thing. You know, and we've really rejected Rav. About Chaya, did you have a question before?
Has long passed, but thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Okay, so I think we'll stop. I think we'll stop here because we are at time. I think this is a good place to stop. So essentially, we've seen two core approaches to say that maybe Onah really is Gezel. The tour says it's Gezel because it's actually Gezel. Right? You're actually stealing from the person. You know, you're just taking the guy's stuff, with, you know, and that's not okay. It's Shlomi Daito, and it's really is just a different form of theft. It's just a violation of his monetary rights. The Pnei Yehoshua has this idea of like, oh, it's Havalei Kigazel. The Isser is really Altonim, right? The Isser is really because you're not supposed to take advantage of him, let's say. We'll have to formulate that more sharply later. But because of that, the result is that you now have money in your possession that you don't have legal rights to. And either that is gazul, right? Is gazul. It is, or no, it's just ki gazul, or it just triggers this obligation of return of the heshiv because it's, you know, it's someone else's money. Or it can be somewhere like kind of in between, is that you have someone else's money illegally, and therefore you have a obligation to return it based on heshiv asagzila. And that may or may not come with this shame gazul or not on the actual money, as well. Fine. All of that, the pashtas would focus in on the, at least in the Pnei Yeshua's case, it could go either way in terms of the total, bitul mekach, or on the, just the extra money, because right? You could say, well, once it became kid gazul, it right. The Torah says don't do it, and that like chazanish, Allah the chazanish by Ribbis just turns the whole thing into gazel. The Pnei Yeshua doesn't go there though, right? Because he says this is limited to dafka the extra money, which is why I feel like the Pnei Yeshua thinks more that it's because you don't have legal rights to it. Memela, that's what makes the extra money into something that you have the heshvas like shagaza, not that the iser turned the whole thing into something untenable. Okay, that's like just a little bit of a side point on that. Okay, so Adkan, first year on Onah, and the next year I think we're going to go into the other side and say, okay, well, what about if it's dim b'fnei atzmo and sharpness side also of the ingeza. Shkach.